Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Michael Keegan, and our guest today is Julie Parity, Administrator of the Food and Nutrition Service within the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Also joining us today from IBM is Randy Livingston. Julie, your agency administers 15 nutrition assistance programs. Would you specifically outline the role that states play in delivering these programs and how they work with your agency to manage and distribute the benefits?
We couldn't do it without our state partners. We've got 1,300 people at the Food and Nutrition Service. We have $100 billion almost of benefits to get out. And thankfully, the way that it all happens is that every state has state agencies that are actually the administering agencies for us with respect to our programs. And those state agencies then work with folks at the local level. For example, in our SNAP program, formerly the food stamp program, what we call welfare offices are the offices with the state-paid caseworkers who actually take the applications from SNAP applicants and make the eligibility determinations and then work with those recipients to get the SNAP benefits that they can then use at their grocery store. With respect to our school meals programs, there's a state agency that's responsible for making sure that all of those school cafeterias are getting the funding that they need to be able to put together nutritious meals and serve those kids. We have a program called the Child and Adult Care Feeding Program, which provides reimbursement, federal reimbursement, for meals that are served in daycare centers and child care centers, family daycare centers that serve low-income children. So I think of our staff at the top of a pyramid, a grand pyramid of probably hundreds of thousands of people that are ultimately responsible for distributing our benefits. It's an enormous task. Our regions are the ones that actually do the hand-to-hand work with our state agencies, the folks in headquarters doing more of the policy work. So it's a fine-tuned machine that at the end of the day serves one in four Americans and serves them very well.
Julie, you've mentioned a couple of times in our conversation the SNAP program or the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. Would you tell us a little bit more about this program and what are some of the critical challenges facing you and how are you addressing them?
This program goes back, incidentally, a very long way. It was authorized in 1961, but it actually goes all the way back to the 30s. It was a Depression-era program that actually did provide stamps to low-income households that they could take to a grocery store and exchange for food. And it has come from those earliest days to be a program now that serves almost 43 million people. In the last 36 months, we have seen an absolutely amazing increase in participation in this program, largely as a result, of course, of the economic downturn. We've had 23 consecutive months of historic highs. And so what it really does prove is that this program is doing exactly what it's intended to do. It's counter-cyclical. And so as the economy is challenged and more people are struggling to get from day to day to feed their families, this program is there for them. It's a mandatory entitlement. We don't have to worry about going to Congress to get more funds for this program. People who are eligible can participate. And then we have seen it. We've charted it over the course of its history. As the economy gets better, the SNAP participation reduces. We are very much looking forward to the day when that will happen. So it's a great program. It's the fundamental primary sort of safety net program that we have. I think very interestingly, we call it also our largest child nutrition program because 50% of the people in SNAP are kids.
Julie, due to those comments about the economic downturn, can you tell us how the states have been dealing with these higher applications and increasing caseloads while facing these significant budget reductions?
You know, you are absolutely right. It is a huge challenge. State coffers are really challenged to be able to provide all of the kinds of services that they traditionally have provided. So we are working very hard with states to help them find more efficient ways of doing things, more effective ways of doing things. We truly do understand the workload management challenges that are faced by states and local jurisdictions today. We are trying very hard to provide some administrative relief and sort of take a little bit of the burden off of the caseworkers, for example, because their caseloads have just grown so very dramatically. We are anxious to approve waivers to make this program easier for people to apply. If it's easier for people to apply, if it's easier for the application, if the application process can be streamlined, it's not only better for the applicant, but it also helps staff. And so we are all about trying to streamline policy and provide waivers to states so that they can provide a better service. We provide technical assistance to them. Our regional offices have developed wonderful relationships with the folks at the states. And so they work hand in glove to provide technical assistance to the states. And we also have something that's kind of unique, something we call state exchange funds, which is we have a small pot of money that where we can actually share some funds with states so that they can go to other states. For example, if a state is really challenged and knows that a neighboring state or another state is doing a particularly good job in one way or another, we can actually fund those state personnel to go to a model state. We can fund a model state to go to a state that is challenged. And these state exchange funds have made a great deal of difference. One of the things that is really wonderful about this program is that the states really do know each other. They really do learn from each other. And it has made an enormous difference over the course of the history of this program. Finally, we really are working increasingly with states on business process reengineering. There are some states that do an extraordinary job in terms of meeting this population with decreased staff, and they're doing it with great accuracy, which is another one of our challenges, is to make sure that the federal taxpayer dollars that go into SNAP are being properly and well spent. There are other states that don't do that so well. So we are learning from the states that have instituted really very effective business process reengineering and trying to share those processes with the other states. So we've got a lot going on in SNAP. You know, it's always the silver lining when you go through these kinds of challenges. I think when we get on the other side of this downturn in the economy, this program will be stronger and more efficient than it's ever been before.
Would you tell us about the special supplemental nutrition program for women, infants, and children, better known as the WIC program? And how are you working with states in that regard to enhance benefits delivery?
Well, WIC is probably our most popular program, certainly I know on the Hill. This is a program that provides nutritious foods. Also, there's a nutrition education component, breastfeeding promotion and support, and referrals to health and other social services to low-income women who are pregnant, postpartum, breastfeeding, their babies, and kids up to age 5 who are at nutritional risk. Something that I learned just when I came on board with the Obama administration that I hadn't realized before is that just under 50%, almost 50% of the babies born in this country are born to WIC moms. So it's a very, very, very important program in terms of providing nutritional benefits to improve the health of those moms and babies. The WIC program, of course, is administered through grants awarded to state health departments or state agencies comparable to the health department. And then they are distributed, the people who participate in WIC are given a series of vouchers each month that they can take to an authorized grocery store to purchase certain food items. And we've recently been able to enhance the traditional program by giving them vouchers that can be used specifically for fruits and vegetables. It's very, very popular. It's really making a difference. One of the things we found, kind of incidentally, since we started the cash value fruit and vegetable program, is that in some communities that are served only by, this happens often in large cities, where you have only very small grocery stores with limited supply of items for food purchase, that because of this program now, where they can come in with a cash value, even those stores that are not participating in WIC, that are competing with the stores in WIC, are now starting to stock more fruits and vegetables. Well, who would have expected that? It certainly was not part of what was intended by this program, but it's having that kind of an impact. And we are starting to move now in working with states so that rather than using these paper vouchers or a system like that, they're going to be increasingly using a debit card, which is much like we use in the SNAP program now. We call it electronic benefits transfer, an EBT card. And the WIC moms will actually have a card that they can take to the grocery store to be able to get their WIC benefits. So that's all very, very exciting.
So, Julie, what about the child nutrition programs? Could you delve into those a little bit? And more particularly, what are you doing to improve program access, the standard of nutritional food, and exploring new strategies for reducing hunger and improving food choices for children?
Well, I'm so glad you asked, because we are very, very excited that the Congress has recently passed a major piece of legislation, the Child Nutrition Reauthorization. It's called the Healthy, Hunger-Free Kids Act. It will allow us for the first time in over 30 years to make real reforms to the school lunch and breakfast programs by really improving the critical nutrition and hunger safety net for millions and millions of kids. This act includes a number of provisions that are really quite historic. The president put money in the budget, and for the first time in many, many, many years, we've got additional funding for this program. We're going to be able to actually upgrade the nutritional standards for school meals. And what's going to really help us to do that is we're going to have additional federal funds to reimburse the schools. We're going to increase the reimbursement rate for school lunches by 6 cents for districts who comply with federal nutrition standards. Now, I know that doesn't sound like a lot, 6 cents per meal. But if you talk to the folks who prepare these foods, they're very, very excited about that 6 cent increase. It's the first real reimbursement rate increase that we've had in this program for over 30 years. So we're very excited about that. We're also, for the first time, the Secretary of Agriculture has been given the authority to improve the nutritional quality of virtually all the foods sold in schools. We will be able to set nutritional standards for foods that are in vending machines, foods that are in the a la carte lines and the school lunch, the food that is sold in school stores. And so not just sort of the traditional school lunch that is available for kids, but the other kinds of foods that are going to that are sold in schools are now going to be required to meet nutritional standards. We're going to be able to increase the number of eligible kids enrolled in the school meal programs by using Medicaid data to directly certify kids. If they're getting Medicaid, if they're eligible for Medicaid and signed up for Medicaid, we're going to be able to directly certify them to get school meals so that they won't have to fill out additional applications. We're also going to find ways to eliminate the paper applications in communities that have high levels of poverty, and that will increase the opportunities for kids to get the free and reduced price meals. So there are a number of things in the Child Nutrition Reauthorization Bill that we are so excited about. We actually have over 100,000 schools that participate, and this is going to provide them additional incentive and opportunity. Let me just say, though, that even without these improvements in the Child Nutrition Reauthorization Bill, we know that there are many, 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 I dare say thousands of schools that are working very hard to make sure that the kids are getting really high-quality meals. We have a program called the Healthier U.S. School Challenge, which actually sets out a number of very difficult criteria in terms of nutrition education, physical activity, what is being served in schools, are they getting, fruits and vegetables, whole grains, low-fat dairy. And if they meet these criteria, they get an award. The highest award is gold with distinction. Then we have gold, silver, and bronze. And the First Lady has challenged us to double the number of schools who are getting the Healthier U.S. School Challenge. So it's just another example of this administration's commitment to making sure that kids are not only eating, but that they're eating well.
How is the Food and Nutrition Service working to reduce hunger while promoting better nutrition? We will ask its administrator, Julie Parity, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.